Satibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanisantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini. This verse 6, which we did last week, we're chapter 15, or 6, which we did last week, continues on into part of verse 7. And so we're going to chant verse 6 and 7. All we did last week was verse 6, okay? So I'll just review verse 6 and we'll move into verse 7. Natad bhasayate suryaha. Natad bhasayate suryaha. Nashashanko napavakaha. Nashashanko napavakaha. Yad gatvānani varatante, tad dhāma paramam mama, mamāyavāṁśo jīva lōke, jīva-bhūta-sanātanah, manas-shashtāni-ndriyāni, prakritistāni-karshati. Okay. So just I'll do the sandhi for both of these verses, just reviewing 6 and going on to 7. So, natat bhāsayate suryaha na shashankaha na pavakaha yad gatvā na nivartante tad dhamma paramam mama. And for verse 7, mama eva amshaha. So mama eva amshaha jiva loke jiva bhutaha sanatanaha manaha shashtani indriyani. See that long E there? Manaha shashtani indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Okay, the verses. So, going back to verse 6. That Brahman, that Dhamma, that abode. Remember I said this before, and this is true for throughout the Gita and throughout the Upanishad, so it's important to know that words like pada, which can mean place, or gati, which means something that is reached, or Dhamma, which means an abode, these three words in particular, we use them because we're going from the first part of the Vedas, the Vedas, the Karmakanda, where you go to heaven, you do rituals and prayers and upasanas in order to go to Swargaloka, or in order to go to that heavenly abode, right? That heavenly abode, that gati, that place that you're seeking. And so we're keeping this word as this heavenly abode in the sense of that which you are seeking, that place that you want to go to, that pada, that stanam, that place that you want to reach. So keeping that those type of words, we now have to look at the meaning of that word differently. Because if we say a dhamma, an abode, we think of like, I'm going to go over to your house, or I'm going to go to that heavenly world, or to a place that I have to actually travel to, a place that is other than my own being. Right? If it's my own being, to call my own being an abode, you know, is actually makes a lot of sense, but we have to understand what we mean. It's like, I would like to go to that place where there is no pain, that place that is free from birth and death. It just happens to be that that abode, that Dhamma, or that Pada, or that Gati, these are just words I want you to get used to, that that place is actually my own being. And so there is no actual travel in terms of going from point A to point B, where I have to actually move to a different locale or a different location. This is a recognition that of that pada, which is gained through the removal of ignorance, right? The removal of ignorance, which causes me to then to discover an abode that is ever present. So that's the idea. That's the difference, and it's a kind of an important difference to make. You have to make it clear to your students. Like if you notice it, even in verse 5, he uses the word padam. That last line of verse 5, he says, padam, that pada, which is avyayam, which is something that is free from any type of change. There's no pada that's not free from change. There's no place, if you reach that place, it's also, if you're going to reach a place, then you can actually go further than that, and you can also return from it, right? But this pada is a pada that is avyayam, or a pada from going to which you cannot return. So in this verse 5, it says, the pada, which is avyayam, means it's indestructible, it's not subject to any type of change or modification. In verse 6, it says, this Dhamma is paramam, means this Dhamma is something that is free from any limitation in terms of that desha kalavastu aparichedaha. It's not, can't be limited by time or by place or by objectification without using the word Dhamma. So in this verse 6, what he says, using the word Dhamma, so now we're going to be re-understand this idea of place. Okay? So he says, Natad bhasayate suryaha, that Dhamma, that abode which the sun can't shine, even the sun can't illuminate. That abode, suryaha means the sun. So na tad bhasayate suryaha, the sun, na bhasayate, it can't make that shine, it can't illumine that abode, that Dhamma. Then he says, nashashankaha, the moon also. Even at night, if you think the moon can illumine something, no, the moon can't illumine that either. What about a little fire? Could that do it? No, napavaka. Fire also can't illumine that. So what he's using, we use these three in the world as something that's often used just in terms of, if we look at the luminaries, we basically have three luminaries that are often quoted. The luminaries, the sun, the moon, and fire. Sometimes they'll say the stars, but usually these are the three luminaries. So the luminaries that we have available to us, like Bhagawan could be, you know, that abode could be somewhere deep in a cave. Yeah. Could be in a cave. You have to take some fire into the cave, and then you could see it. You know, that you can't do that either. You get at night, maybe we can't see it at night through the moon. No, no. Sun should be able to, no. No luminary can light it up. So that abode which no luminary can light up, yed getwa, having gone to which, so here we've got the getwa, having reached, na nivartante, one can never return. Luminaries can't light it up. And having gone to it, getwa is indeclinable past participle. So yed getwa, having gone to which, na nivartante, they can't return. Who they can't return means those who know. Those who have gone there, the ones who have gone there, they can never come back. So that Dhamma, that abode is paramam, is supreme. And that is my supreme abode. So supreme, right? Paramam. That is my abode. So the Lord talking, Krishna talking. That is my abode, which is desha kalavastu aparichedaha, which is free from space, yet it's free from time, it is free from vastu, any type of objectivity. So it's the very abode it is. It is an abode, it is, right? But it's not something that can be objectified, it's not something that can be limited, it's not something that is subject to time. So that abode is Brahman. So now the question, so this is Krishna talking to Arjuna, teaching Arjuna. And so Shankara presents this kind of doubt that Arjuna might be might be going on in his mind. So Chakra says something like, you know, you say, that abode, that Tadama, Gatanam, for those who go there, there's no coming back from it. What kind of an abode is that? If you go to a place, you should be able to come back from it, right? Because you've gone there, you can turn around and run back, you can come back. And even there, even in the whole Vedanta and in the whole Vedic body of knowledge, of course, any world that you go to, say in the Vedas, if you were to go to an abode, in terms of a heavenly abode or a hell abode, let alone traveling on this planet, but if you were to go to any of the heavenly abodes, like to Swargaloka, of course you can come back and will come back, even if you don't want to come back, right? Because once your punya runs out, you will return, right? And so nothing that exists within time and space and that you reach through any kind of a karma is itself going to be sacrosanct. So if you're talking about going to any of the worlds above, any of the higher heaven realms, when the punya runs out, then you will come back. Your vacation is over. And then also, your jail time is over also. Once you've done your time, in terms of the lower realms, the papa, the papa yonis, the lower realms, of course, when the papa runs out, then you'll also be released from those realms. So within duality, we don't gain any state of experience, nor do we reach anything, which is sacrosanct, means going there, we stay there. You can even think of it in terms of, you can think of it in terms of going, having gone, you know, having gone, I will come back, even in terms of emotional states, even mental states. Any type of state of experience is not permanent within samsara, within duality. So whether it's an internal state, whether it's the state of reaching any type of heavenly world or hell world, as you leave this body, this is what we'll be talking about in this next verse. If you go to a hell world or a hell world or a heaven world, you'll come back from that. If you travel in this world, you'll come back from that, or you'll leave that. You'll come and you'll go. That's the nature of the creation. Every experience that you have in this creation is bound by time, it's bound by place, and it's bound by objectivity. Right? This is different from this. This side is different from this side. And so, naturally, within samsara, you say, having gone there, you shall return. If you're talking about any of the lokas. You know? But if you're talking about mental states also, it's interesting to look at it that way. Any mental state you have, if you're happy, well, you'll come back to your baseline. If you're miserable, you'll come back to your baseline. There's coming and going for every state that you have. But here he says, for this, my supreme, my paramam dhamma, for this having gone there, there is no return. Because it's a totally different type of going. It's a totally different type of going. It's the going which is based upon knowledge. The going that is brought about by the removal of ignorance. It's the going which is caused by one's recognition. That the seeker, in fact, is the sought. And so Shankara brings up this doubt. How can you say such a thing as an introduction? You know, how could that be? What's the cause for that, that you could go? And then having gone there, you wouldn't return. How could that be? So in this next verse, he goes, so, mama eva amshaha jivaloke jivabhutaha sanatanaha. He says, this is only in this jiva loka, in the experience, in the loka, in the world of a jiva, of a given individual. So we can say like this, in the loka, in the experience of any given individual, any given jiva, this is only an amsha. This is only an amsha of me. It's only a part of me. In the experience of a jiva, the jiva buddha, be the being of the jiva, being a jiva, in the experience of the jiva, is only a part of me. So amsha means a part. Eva means only, indeed. Mama means genitive singular me. So it's only a part of me. What's only a part of me? This jiva bhutaha. This becoming a jiva. This jiva means this transmigrating entity, this body, mind, sense organs, this sukshma sharira, the subtle body, you know, that the subtle body that has kartritvam, doership, and poktritvam, enjoyership. This person here that is transmigrating, this transmigrating person, this person is sanatanaha, which is endlessly, beginninglessly traveling on and on and on. This jiva, in the experience, in this world, so it means from the standpoint of this world, this jiva is, this jiva bhuta, this being a jiva, is only an amsha of me. Okay, that's what he says. That's his answer to this. How can you, how is it that you can go and then not come back? So he's starting to answer this now. He says, what you're talking about, this jiva, what you're thinking of a jiva, that's only an amsha of me. And so now we have to go on and understand exactly what he means by amsha. I'm going to talk about that for a while, and then we'll go to the next three lines. From all of our experience within the world, so jiva loka, within the world, so from your standpoint, you have this body, mind, sense organs complex. We can have the organs of action too, but for now, because of how the verses are unfolding, we'll just say you have sense organs, you have a mind, you've got a body, this physical body, right? And you are a conscious being. So you are, we'll say like this, for each one of us, even for the animals, you are a conscious being that has a body, and you have sense organs, and you have mind. And to be complete, we can add the organs of action and the prana. Right? But you, as a conscious being, have these. You have kartritvam, you have doership, and you have bhoktritvam, you have enjoyership. So I do actions, and I receive the results. I gain the results of my actions. I do a karma, and I gain the result of those karmas. That's the kartritvam, is the doership. I'm doing this, and I get this in return. That's the bhoktritvam. And so I'm receiving a lot of input, and I'm also doing a lot of things to gain that input. So I have this kartritvam and bhoktritvam. I'm a doer, and the things I do are different than the things you do. The things I experience and the order in which I experience them are very different from the things that you experience and the order in which you experience. In fact, we can never even have the same experience because we can never be in exactly the same place at the same time. So that's very interesting to think. Not one of us have ever had an identical experience in reference to samsara. Because you would have to be in the same place at the same time, looking at the same vantage point. One of the things the Jains say, which is a very ancient philosophical spiritual system in India, one of the main things that they say is that anything you have to say, it has to be accompanied with something like, so it seems. Because what they say is, if within Maya, you know, within duality, there is nothing that can't be viewed from literally infinite number of standpoints. And so whatever you're seeing is only as it is, as it seems, right here. And everybody else is seeing and experiencing it differently because of a different context and from a different angle. Right? The whole emotional mental context, you know, is kind of the filter through which you're seeing any given thing, and you're seeing it through a unique time and place. So what your experience is totally different. We have a shared reality. Vedanta will say like this. We have a shared reality here in Ishwara's creation that we call the Ishwara Srishti, the Lord's creation. That's the Vyavahara. But on that, there is an infinite subjectivity that we call Jiva Srishti is being projected onto, because the lens through which we're looking at everything. You know, and so we're all kind of have a kind of a unique lens. And that unique lens is also clouded with our own personal ragged dveshas, likes and dislikes, and our personal complexes and all of that. So everything is not as it seems, right? Or is, so we say. That's how the giants will say. So it seems, as it seems. So here, what we're looking at when we say, from the standpoint of the jiva, I am all these things. I'm a doer, I'm an enjoyer, I have a body, I have a sense organs and mind. But Ishwara says, you know, from the standpoint of the jiva, of all of that collection that you've just given, I'm only one little amsha of that. I'm one amsha. I'm the conscious being. So each one of us, that's what we have in common. You have the generic body. We each have a body. We have kind of the archetype, the instinctual, the body, mind, sense organs. But who is Bhagawan in that? There's two ways of looking at this, but in this way it's like this. You say, I'm a conscious being. That amsha, Ishwara says, that amsha is me. That part is me. Everything else is mithya. So each one of us says, in this mithya creation, each one of us says, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being. Tibby could talk, she would say, I'm a conscious being. All beings will say, I'm a conscious being. And the conscious being that is being labeled, and so we have an infinite parts, infinite umshas, infinite parts, from this perspective. But that umsha that is being labeled there, that is me. And that amsha is the paramam dhamma. That paramam dhamma, that supreme abode, means is that amsha that is limitless. That amsha is my being. That is myself. All of this that makes for that duality to be able to say there are many amshas, all of that is mithya. This whole creation is mithya. And so your mithya body, your mithya sense organs, your mithya doership, there's mithya doership, there's mithya enjoyership, because doership and enjoyership takes place in duality. You require the mind for it. In deep sleep, that mind's not there, right? You require you have to have duality, you have to have change, you have to have subject-object relationship. And so even doership and enjoyership belongs to the entire creation. And so from the standpoint, when you're talking from the standpoint of the creation, and you want to talk about who am I am that paramam dhamma, which is only an umsha of you. And what umsha is that? That umsha is the conscious being, the me. That is me. That conscious being is me. And so he says, and it is this recognition of this amsha, this part of you, in the recognition of that, there is no return. Because you're recognizing the satyam from the mithya. Means the example, and Swamiji uses these examples in his commentary. I think Shankar does too. He uses the clay pot. It's like if the pot recognizes I'm clay, it can't go back and pretend like it's not clay anymore. Once the pot sees I am clay, you know, and that its being, that its very being is clay, it can't erase it. It can't go back to just being the pot, right? It's not that the pot has some clay or the pot has to reach the clay. The pot is the clay. It recognizes that. So once it recognizes that, it can't go back. It can't lose its clayness when it becomes a plate. Can't lose its clayness when it becomes, you know, when it becomes a tumbler, because the clayness is something that doesn't go through in any modification. Thinking of in terms of clay pot, if you can think of it like this, we'll go to rope steak in a minute. Say you recognize the clayness, the conscious being of every thought you have. Then no matter what thought is there, what emotion is there, the substance is there, changeless. Right? The substance doesn't change at all. That's the amsha. That amsha, from the standpoint of the mind, your mind is different, your mind is different, your mind is different. And every thought is different, every thought is different, every thought is different. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, the amsha, the common denominator, which all of those thoughts enjoy, whether they're your many thoughts or the thoughts of each person, that common denominator where you say, I am, that is me, and that is the avyaya. That is what is changeless. So he says, that which you consider the jiva from your own standpoint, right? There are many amshas. But really that what you consider to be an amsha, that is the paramam dhamma. That paramam dhamma means it's something which is totally free of time and space and objectivity. And you have to discover in yourself that me, that one that's totally free of any type of time, any type of change. Spatially free means there's never a place where it is not. So just think about it like this. If I look over here or I walk over there, I'm in a different place. Just by walking across the room, I'm in a different place. But consciousness doesn't walk around across the room. It's like if I take this pot, this cup, and I move it from here to here, the cup is moving across the room, right? The cup's move. It is. It is moving across the room. But the space isn't. The space isn't moving across the room. The cup is moving through space. And so here, I recognize that which is not moving. My being doesn't move. You can say, if you want to look at it from the standpoint of the creation of being a body in the creation, you can say, well, you can say, it's a little erroneous, but you could say like, well, I'm moving through my being. Say I'm moving through space, I could say I'm moving through my being. You know what that's really like saying? We can say that from the standpoint of duality. We can appreciate that. But that's almost like saying, if you have a clay relief, basque relief carving in a big block of clay, and you carve into it an intricate scene, a city scene with lots of people walking and moving about, and one little person says, I'm walking through the clay. I'm walking through the clay. Is the person in the basque relief clay, is the person walking through the clay? He's not walking through the clay because there's nothing there but clay. But from the standpoint of this jivaloka, from the standpoint of the perspective of the jiva, you can feel like that. Because you have more of a kind of the illusion of the creation, the mithyatva of the creation, has this type of rope snake quality, which is a little different than clay, than pot clay. It's not different in a way, but it's different in another way. We feel like this world, the time, the space, air, fire, water, earth, this whole creation, we think of it more ephemerally, in a sense, more like a dream. Yeah. And say you have a dream, the dream comes from you, is sustained by you, goes back into you, and the jiva, you know, we say all of the jivas in the dream, they're just umshas of me. They're just parts of me. Because each jiva, each little individual in the dream says, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. Yeah. That whole dream creation has come from me, is sustained by me, and when it resolves into me, it's unmanifest. It goes completely unmanifest. So while it's here, the space, air, fire, water, earth of the creation and all of the elementals and all of the individuals within that dream, you know, are in space itself, and the space is in me. So when you think of the creation coming, even the dream creation, space, air, fire, water, earth, those are the five elements, comes into manifestation. And within that manifest creation are the jivas. They're also part of it. Right? They also come. It's not like the universe comes and then the jivas say, well, I think I'll jump in there too. They all come together. They're all part of one fabric. But we see the space is all pervasive to whatever the creation is or whatever the experience is. Space is always all pervasive. And so the jivas, which the individuals, are moving through space. Everything is moving and taking place in space because space is all pervasive. But the space itself is in me. And so I say all of these, the space is of the same order of reality as is the earth, is the fire, are the jivas. But in the same order of reality, the space is the most subtle. And so the fire doesn't burn the space, right? Air doesn't blow the space. Water doesn't wet the space. Earth doesn't dirty the space because space is more subtle. And so in the most subtle elements, all of the other things of the same order of reality are in without touching it. That's why even in the Bhagavad Gita and the Katha Upanishad, there'll be verses that say, "The fire doesn't burn me," you know, "Fire doesn't burn me. Space does. Fire doesn't burn me. Water doesn't wet me." All these things, like space, because space is the most subtle. And so here, that whole space, and this is the dream, and it's the same here, that whole space, right, exists in me. I am more subtle than space. But from the standpoint of the space, from the jivas within the dream, all of those jivas, from their own standpoint, you know, enjoy a part of me, because this jiva's over here, and this jiva's over here, and this jiva's over here. Actually, I'm the self of the whole thing, from my standpoint. But from the standpoint of each jiva, body, mind, sense organs, has to recognize me. Right? So there's going to be many recognitions taking place. And each recognition is an umsha. But what do you recognize in the recognition is that I am the self of the whole thing. And so for me, there is no coming and going. There's no coming back from that recognition, because I've never not been there. It's like, how can you come back from a place that you already are? There's no going, there's no coming or going involved. That's the recognition. And so he says, so for that I am that umsha, but upon recognizing which I am limitless, I'm the limitless Brahman, and that is my abode, and there's no coming back from it. However, if you don't know that, then we have a different situation, and that's the situation from this creation, your body, mind, sense organs, the subtle body, transmigrating. Because from the standpoint of you enjoy the self that you are is Brahman. You're not going to become Brahman, you already are Brahman. But from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, from the standpoint of your experience, you are traveling. Right? Because you are traveling. The mind is traveling, the Atma is not traveling. But the mind is traveling, the sense organs are traveling, the sukshma sharira, the subtle body is traveling. The body is traveling. Every time you move, there's travel. And so that traveling continues as long as the mind, as though continues, the mitya continues. As long as your mind says, I'm traveling, I'm a traveler, I'm a doer, I'm an enjoyer, then from the standpoint of the mind, that's what you are. And that then your experience is totally identified, the mind's experience of your being is totally identified with itself. The mind's experience of the subtle body, totally identified with the subtle body. Right? And it's the mind that has the problem, not Brahman doesn't have any problem. Yourself doesn't have any problem. It's always exactly the same. You know? But until you discover that, until the mind discovers that, it takes you to be itself. And so then all of the activities of the mind, all of the karma, all of the punya and papa, all of the transmigration, all of the karma pull, all of these things are something that we enjoy. Why? Because we say we do. It's not real, but we say we do. It's exactly to understand the power of ajnanam, of ignorance. It's just like if you mistake a rope for a snake, as long as you see the snake, then that is your reality. Right? Everything that you think, everything that you feel, all of your emotional reactions, you can even think that you're dying because you rubbed up against it and you think you got bit. That is your reality. At that time, that's your emotional reality. Your experiential reality, that's the jiva srishti. When you see the rope, that jiva srishti, that jiva's creation is gone. That jiva srishti, the jiva creation, was caused by ajnanam of the rope. So ajnanam is very powerful. Ajnanam, this ignorance, covers what's there and projects something. If it's covering what is there, then you can mistake it to be anything that relates to it. For the rope will say snake, because snake will cause a scary reaction for you. You could also think it's a water streak or a branch or a crack in the earth. Anything that could possibly have that beingness, the shape, You make that mistake, and then that is your reality. So now if my mind says, I am the conscious being, and whatever, and sometimes I, the conscious being, am happy, sometimes I'm sad, sometimes I am, you know, not sometimes, I will eventually die, sometimes I'm healthy, sometimes I'm feeling sick, I am getting older and older, you know, my memory is not as good as it used to be, my hearing is not as good as it used to be, when I was young I looked like this, but now I look like, this is just samsara, this is exactly what it is, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad, because there's what we call this anyonya adyasa, this super, total superimposition. Superimposition means I take myself, my mind takes me to be itself, and then I gain all of the qualities of the mind. That's the reality. But what about when that's the reality, then whatever transmigration is going on, whatever the reality, whatever the is going on in samsara, that is my experience. Right? If that ajnanam is there, then that's what I take to be the reality. So accepting that. Let's look at this second line. He says, mama shashtani indriyani prakritistani karshati. Okay? That line actually goes with this next verse. So let's check out. Chant the next verse and I can do the three together. Shariram yadavapnoti. Shariram yadavapnoti. Yachapyut kramati swaraha. Yashapyut kramati shvaraha prahitvaitani samyati prahitvaitani samyati vayurkandhani vashayat vayurkandhani vashayat shariram yet avapnoti yet cha api utkramati ishvaraha grahitva etani samyati vayuhu gandhan eva ashayat. See that last one? Vayuhu gandhan eva ashayat. So he's talking here about the transmigration of the jiva. So the first line says, manashashtani indriyani. The indriyas, the five sense organs, or the indriyani, the five sense organs, with the manas, the mind, as the sixth. Sometimes the manas, the mind, shashta means sixth. So manas shashtani indriyani, the five sense organs with the mind as the sixth. Sometimes you think people will include the mind as a sense organ, because the mind is what receives all of the five sense organs, the impressions from all of the five sense organs. So it says this. The indriyas, together with the mind, as the sixth, prakritisthani. Prakriti here is the physical body. The mind and the sense organs, which are abiding in the physical body, okay, which have a physical body, prakriti. Prakriti is the material. So the sense organs, along with the physical body, as the sixth, karshati, giving them up. Gathering them together, pulling them together, karashati, manashashtani indriyani, prakritistani karashati, he pulls those together, then what? Shariram yad avapnoti, yet cha api ukramati ishwaraha. It says, pulling these to himself, ishwara, the lord of the body, the one who the jiva. Here the Ishwara, everything is really Ishwara in terms of Maya. But here's Ishwara as the jiva, transmigrating jiva, taking together, collecting his sense organs and the mind. He utkramati, he gives up the body, and then avapnoti shariram. He gives up the body, giving up the body, he then takes another body, avapnoti shariram. So first, utkramati, this Ishwara, the one who's transmigrating, he collecting his sense organs and mind, he gives up this body, and then he says, and then he takes another body, shariram avapnoti. So he says, so it takes another body, then he says, Grahitwa etani samyati. So he collects his sense organs, he gives up this body, then taking etani, taking the sense organs of the mind, grahitwa etani, he goes, samyati, he goes, and he takes another body. That's it. So let me just tell it to you again. Okay? We've got three verbs here to start, for starters. The subject is Ishwara. Ishwara means the one who is the Lord, the one who transmigrates. Okay? So the one who's in control, the one who has doership, kartritvam, the jiva. All jivas are really only in the Ishwara. But here's the jiva. This jiva, collecting together the sense organs in the mind, leaves one body. And this body dies. He leaves this body. And leaving this body, having taken with him now all the sense organs in the mind, he goes, he travels, he goes, and he takes another body, shariram avapnoti. He gathers the sense organs and mind together, travels, leaves the body, travels along with them, and takes another body. Okay, takes another body. Then he gives an example. Vayur gandhan eva ashayat. Just like wind, vayuhu, eva, vayuhu, ashayat, from one place, takes the gandha, scent. So say the vayu, say there's a flower, there's a beautiful flower with beautiful rose, with a beautiful rose scent, for instance, and the wind comes along, and it takes the scent of the flower along with it. You know, you can't see the scent going, but the wind comes and it takes the scent with it and spreads it to another place. And so here the subtle body does the way the karma goes. The subtle body, when this physical body dies, when that karma is over, then the jiva, taking with it, actually if we want to see all the things that it takes, it doesn't get into all of it here. When the physical body dies, then the jiva, the subtle body, the one that is enjoying the amsha of me, because the me goes as though from the standpoint of the subtle body, what does it take with it? Well, it takes the mind that is made of the four, the ahankara, the I notion, these four types of thoughts are considered the antakarana of the mind. So it takes the ahankara, the I notion, and the memory, and the intellect, and then just the fluctuating mind, the manas, and it takes the five organs of action, the karmendriyas, your hands and feet, etc. It takes the five pranas, takes the five sense organs. So that's 19 elements. These 19 elements exit the body together. It's like the Ishwara, the Lord of the body, the jiva entity, takes with it the whole sukshma sharira, leaves the body, kind of like the wind taking the scent, because you can't see the jiva going. The body dries, you don't see a jiva getting up and walking out of the body and leaving. You can't see it. So just like the wind will take the scent, and you don't see that happening. The sukshma sharira leaves the body, it travels with these components, and it moves into another body, all according to karma. And so from the standpoint of the jiva, this is why we say jiva loka, from the standpoint of the jiva, I am traveling, right? I am traveling to another loka, and that will be your experience from the standpoint of the jiva. Say that the karmas are done in this body dies. And what happens when this body dies? Well, the Ishwara takes all of these things, moves, according to your karma, into another plane, another set of experiences based upon your karma. So to other lokas it can go, and then come back to this one. But when it's going, you are going. That's your experiences. You're not left behind, right? Because the sukshma sharira is what actually, from its own standpoint, as though reflects or manifests consciousness from its own standpoint. And so now you are traveling. So for you, from the standpoint of the sukshma sharira, there's no, never cannot ever be any death experience, because the sukshma sharira itself, being sattva, you know, the mind and sense organs being sattva, they reflect consciousness, they enjoy consciousness, and so wherever they go, you know, you are. Wherever they go, you are. It's like if I took this cup, wherever the cup goes, space is, right? Wherever it goes, space is. So it can say, I'm taking the space with me, right? So the sukshma sharira is saying, I'm taking the self with me. You know, I'm going. The cup's not going to say, actually, I'm taking the space with me, right? It's saying, I am the space, right? I am the space. I'm the one who's going. And so I will feel, the sukshma sharira, it will feel, I am the one that's traveling. And actually, you aren't traveling at all. Everything's traveling within you. The whole Maya is traveling within you. But for you, there is no travel at all. But if the sukshma sharira is sattva and reflects consciousness, wherever it goes, I am. Right? It's like a mirror. If I go like this, where the mirror, wherever the mirror goes, the sky is. Right? Because the substance of the mirror reflects the sky. Wherever it is, the sky is. So wherever the mind is, I am. So there's another verse, I think it's in the Katha Upanishad. I'm not sure which Upanishad, I thought it was Katha, maybe not. If I send my mind to the moon, right? If I send my mind to the moon, myself is already there. It already won the race. Right? If I send my mind to the moon, the self is already there. If I bring it back, the self is already there. I can never win the race. Because wherever the mind goes, I am. Right? Wherever the mind goes, I am. You can imagine when this physical body dies, then the sukshma sharira goes, and they're just talking now about the mind and the sense organs because they're sattva. So they have that sense of self, that anyonya adyasa there, that superimposition is there. So the mind just says, I'm going. Or it'll say, like Steve Jobs said when he died, he goes, wow. Wow, because, I mean, that's a beautiful comment. Because there is no death. There is no such thing. There's a change of experience, for sure. But not a change of me. And so I will go. But nobody's going to see me go. Nobody's going to see the subtle body go. Because the sense organs are meant to see physical world. So like the scent is taken by vayu, by the wind, from, say, a flower, from a fragrant place, like that, the sukshma sharira will go and travel. And then from your standpoint, from the one who doesn't know, from your standpoint, you'll be traveling. But the one who's actually there isn't traveling at all. For that one, that amsha of me, is from the standpoint of what's an amsha from the standpoint of the jiva, is really a paramantama. Is that abode which is free from time and free from space, and is my very being. So. That's good enough. We'll do the next ones tomorrow. Maybe next week. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
little confused about this word parts.
Oh, amsha, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Brahman has no parts.
Right.
It's free of parts.
That's why I keep saying from the standpoint of the jiva. From the standpoint of the jiva, not from the standpoint of Brahman.
Yeah.
Like from the standpoint of the jiva, I can say, I'm a conscious being, you're a conscious being.
Right.
So from the standpoint of the jiva, we have parts as though. It's all mitya.
Yeah.
There's no parts from the standpoint of reality. But from the standpoint of mitya, there's parts.
So when it's said that there's a part of me in each jiva, right? What part? A part of me? It's not really a. It's a part. It's Brahman's part.
Yeah.
Part of each jiva, right? Is that what the?
Brahman is the part of each jiva, but from the standpoint of Brahman, there's no parts.
Yeah.
Okay. But from the standpoint of the jiva, there's parts, as though, but not really.
Yeah.
But that's why the dream drishtant illustration is so good, you know, because in the dream. You can see from every, there's so many jivas, and each jiva is a conscious being. Each one says, I am a conscious being, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being. But it's kind of like mirrors in a funhouse. They're all enjoying only one conscious being, the me, one me. But from the standpoint of the jivas, each one says, I am me. Well, that part that's saying, I am, that one they're referring to, each one, is that is me. But it's from the, standpoint of the creation. Of the individuals. And each individual has to realize there's only one me. That the me that I am is that Paramam Dhamma. That the me that I am is actually the self of all beings. But each individual has to realize that.
And every individual gets a part of that, has a part.
Well, in reality, there are no parts. In reality, the self that you enjoy is the self. The self has no parts. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not, that can be a misunderstanding that you would think, well, each individual is enjoying one part of me. So here's a part, and here's another little part, and here's another. But there's no duality from the standpoint of the self. So the conscious being that you are is the one conscious being. That's why if you understand the dream, how many conscious beings come in the dream? And how many conscious beings are there? There's one conscious being. But from the standpoint of the dream, so many beings are enjoying the one conscious being. You have to be able to go from the self to mitya. That's why mitya, understanding mitya is so important, what that means. For mitya, for anything something to be mitya, it can't have any reality apart from whatever is the satyam, the adhishtana. So the rope, the snake is mitya, the rope is what is actually there. The snake has no second being. Right. Clay is mitya, and pot is mitya, clay is satyam, the adhishtana, what is actually there. And so now if you say this whole manifest creation that is such a huge manifestation of duality, of diversity, infinite diversity.
In so many individuals.
But that it is mitya. If all the entire diversity, this entire manifestation is mitya, that means it has no being, independent being of its own. And so what is the adhishtana? What is it that's actually here that gives being to all of this? Where everything negates everything else. I mean, you know, the waking state is negated by the dream state, for instance. When the waking state is here, the dream state is not here. One moment negates the next moment. One color negates another color. They all limit each other. They're all bound by change. But what is the common denominator? What is the adhishtana of the whole thing? And that is being itself, existence itself, consciousness itself. That's the thing that is the conscious being, that is you, is the invariable. the invariable that everything equally enjoys. You know, either as knower or as known. Everything, blanket everything as being. It is, or you are, you am. It's just isness. Everything enjoys that. It never varies as things go on changing. What remains as the substratum is being itself. And then in terms of your experience as a jiva, everything, the common denominator not only is known. There is no experience possible that is not known. By the fact that it's an experience that is known, you can't get around it, you can't get away from it. You can even imagine non-existence, and then the imagination non-existence is known. So that's a common denominator that you can't do anything about it. That's why we say that what is actually here is sat-chit. That's the sat means existence, chit, consciousness. That's the adhishtana. That's the truth of what is here. Everything is coming and going in that. Coming into existence, going out of existence, subject to birth and death and continual change. But that continual change is taking place in the stability of conscious being, which is me. I am the conscious being. There's no other conscious being. But I take the conscious being to be this body, but this body comes into being and goes out of being. Take it to be my mind, well, the thoughts come into being and go out of being. So what is can't come into being and go out of being, can't be bordered by non-existence.
So it's not produced by the experience or any of the
It's the substratum. It's the substratum. It's always there no matter what the experience. And so how to locate the truth of that, just think of, well, the me, what makes me me, is never not there no matter what the experience is. Now, if I say, I am happy, but I was sad, I was irritated, I was depressed, I was joyous, whatever. The I is always there. The I never goes away. The states go away. So that's why this strict drisha viveka, the see or seen differentiation, is so important, because you have to ask yourself, who never goes away? What can't be negated? That is the satyam. Satyam is the thing that is actually there. And so you're identifying, so Krishna is saying, you're identifying with all the mitya. There's only one little amsha there that's me. And that's the sat-chit, the conscious being. That is me. Like, even if you say, oh, I've had so many experiences. So many experiences. I've been to so many places. My mind has done so many things. But so in all of this duality, all these countless experiences I've had, I'm just that one little amsha me that is the constant, no matter what the experience has been. And it is that me that's the Paramam Dhamma. It is that me that is the self of the entire creation. Like you are the Paramam Dhamma of your dream. That's the amsha that all this whole manifest duality enjoys. Everything's different from everything else, but there's one thing that every single thing there enjoys, and that amsha that every single one enjoys is the me that is the self of the whole thing. And that knowing, which once you know that, you can't come back from it, because there's nothing but that. There's nowhere to go once you know that. The ajnanam is removed, so you can't go back to identifying yourself with something that you're not. Once you know. It's like once you see the rope, you can talk about how you used to see it as a snake, but you can't get the snake back. Because you've already seen the rope. So you can squint and everything and try to pretend. But you can't do it. You can teach about it, though. When you have knowledge, you can't get back. You can't get back that ignorance. You can't even remember what it's like, really. That you can teach about it, but you can't get the experience back once you know.
Well, you can know that you're not the body. But it comes back as I am the body, as I have, as...
Yes and no. It's when you say, for satyam mitya, okay, you can have a, somebody can teach you, not using a pramana, but just a book learning type of thing, but the Shruti says that you are not the body. And so then you say, okay, I have Shraddha in the Shruti, in the Upanishads, that I am not the body. And what are you? Well, the Shruti says I'm a transmigrating jiva. And then it also says that I'm Atma, that myself never changes, myself never comes and goes. So that's kind of some sort of a book learning.
Intellectual.
And then you think, okay, so that's what they say, I believe that. Now I have to go meditate or something to recognize it. That's really the Vivekananda. You know, that's the kind of the Neo-Vedanta. But that isn't, if you, for us, satyam mitya. If you say, you can't say I'm not the body, really, in a meaningful way, without knowing who you are. Because you say, I am not the body. Then you have to know who the I am is. And the I am, the me, is here. It's not somewhere else to have an intellectual, abstract, what do you call it?
Concept.
No, an indirect knowledge of. So when you say, I am not the body, then you have to know what you mean by it, who the I is. That's what we say, for something to be understood as mitya, you have to know the satyam. Like say, somebody says, that snake is not a snake, it's a rope. That snake is a rope, it's not a snake. How do you know? Well, somebody told me.
Felt the
touch. I believe what they say. Of course, I see the snake there. I don't see any rope, I see a snake. But they've told me.
Yeah. So the difference is really the inquiring into, isn't it? To really use it
for
the teachings.
Well, even, yeah, but the teaching itself, if the teaching is used as a pramana, you know, as a means of knowledge, then you're teaching it as a means of knowledge. The whole teaching is meant to direct the mind to recognizing you, your own being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's in the recognition of your own being, then you can differentiate yourself, subject, object, and all of these methodologies we use. You can actually experientially recognize what's being pointed to. Ah, that's true. In every given thought, I'm there. In every thought. You know. So there's so many different modalities that are used to kind of make you, oh. It's like the teaching is supposed to be a mirror, holding up a mirror.
I'm still trying to, you know, when Swamiji said, like, for years he didn't understand that the teachings were actually a pramana,
yeah,
until he met this one teacher.
Who taught it that way.
So I'm just trying to understand what was missing in the first place when it was taught. I mean, is it in just reading the text but not going into it in depth? Or?
Well, it was more taught like a lecture, like a sermon, that then you have to go meditate. And that's part of the way it's taught, as though a sermon is being given on what the Upanishads have to say, and then you are taught that now you have to go meditate to realize it. And so in your mind, it's you have the idea that now I have to go and meditate to have an experience of myself.
Of the I.
Of the I, of this big I. So you have this big I, little I. And it's actually taught like that. There's kind of a, this kind of a sampradaya like that. And so Swamiji was contained by that. It never made any sense to him. All he did was, and so he said he lost his hair meditating. He's bald. He said he meditated so much he lost his hair.
Well, you're always waiting for it.
Yeah, and you get an experiences.
Yeah.
You get experiences. You're like Swamiji.
I must be in trouble.
Look at, he lost his too.
You got two.
Well, I don't know about the loss about meditating.
But that's what Swamiji, I don't know if he was kidding, but I don't think he was really kidding. I think he was kind of serious. You know, so he was on a trip, because then you're trying to have a meditative experience of yourself.
Yeah.
And the problem is, that's not Nididhyasana. With Nididhyasana, we do meditate, but we know what we're meditating on.
Mm-hmm.
We're meditating on something which is completely present, which is much different than thinking that you need to meditate to have an experience of something.
Yeah.
And then if you don't get that experience, you feel like you're not doing it.
You're not doing it right.
You're not pure enough.
You're not pure enough, and you know, you're not evolved enough and all of this.
Or you're too dumb.
But the whole thing is that you're already completely present. There's a differentiation has to be there. The goal is already present. What you want is already completely present.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to just be differentiated. There's nothing to reach, and there's nowhere to go. There's something to recognize. And so Nididhyasana, because there's so much teaching, Nididhyasana is really, in a way, just a slowed down teaching. Say if we do a guided meditation, it's just slowing down, taking an aspect and just sitting in that aspect and letting the mind just sit with yourself. Recognize yourself. There's no travel involved at all. And there's no gain of an experience. The experience is totally present already. Not as the very nature of yourself.
You don't come back from that?
Because what has caused you to think that you were away from it was ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What made you think you were away was ignorance. And so when the ignorance is there, there's nowhere to... No way to come back, because you already are it. You can't, and there's no time, space, or objectivity, subject, object. You're both the subject and the object. You can't get away from yourself to come back.
So if a teacher teaches it without having his own realization, right? Without having his own Brahmanishta, that could be really messed up then, because then you have to kill the ego. In order to get there.
If the teacher is a pundit in the true sense of it, means been through Shankara and has been taught properly, but is still just a householder in the sense of not owning this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a householder.
Mm-hmm.
We're all so-called householders. But yeah, you know, because we're not sannyasis, that's what they mean. But you can be owning this knowledge by guna, by quality. You know, but say a person who's still very much involved in the world and that's what they want, and, you know, samsara. They'll say, you know, I'm a samsari, but I've studied this for a long time. I've studied with my teacher and I can teach you. So even though they don't have Brahmanishta in the sense of really spending their life and their whole being is just recognizing that, they can still teach, even though there'll be something missing, but still they're teaching according to, they're teaching traditionally, still you can get it. But what if your sampradaya, means the whole teaching tradition, is not correct? Where you're teaching it that way, that you give a lecture and now go meditate and have an experience, then that negates, it's like sending you on in a false direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to Swamiji until he met that one teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything made sense. Then he said when he looked at Shankara, looked through the Upanishads, it was all over the place.
Yeah.
But he needed to be told that. And then everything made sense, you know. Everything was fine then. You know. But until then, you're really set in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You even become even more sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And so frustrating, because there's no solution. It's not like you can't find it, because you are looking for that experience. And even if you have a meditative experience, which is just a mental state,
mm-hmm.
you are having that experience, which then you come back from.
Yeah, it gets isolated.
Yeah. Not only gets isolated, it's also the experience is really more the antikarana vritti, the thought modification, the subtle meditative experience that can be wonderful and all of that, but you've gone and come. Mm-hmm. You've gone to that experience, and now you've come back from that experience, and you need to get that experience again. Mm-hmm. Where with Vedanta, it's not that at all. It's recognizing the one who was there in that experience and the one who is still there when the next experience comes. That invariable me, that never comes and goes. So this is the very being, the truth of every experience. And that's why the viveka is so important, that discrimination. And otherwise, what happens is you're waiting also to achieve a continuous mental state of some sort, like a meditative mental state. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you can get a more profound meditative mental state, and then you can think, I should have a mental state that's nirvikalpa samadhi, and then I'll really be a great mahatma, because I'm sitting in nirvikalpa samadhi and people, my disciples, are having to feed me, like stories about Ramana, you know.
Also, the attachment to samadhi is so strong, you know, when you have the experience a lot, but it doesn't mean you have a lot of knowledge. You're just in a certain mental state.
Yeah, and then you try to maintain it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go out in the world, and obviously you don't have the same samadhi.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ramana was lucky to have these people feeding him, because...
Yeah, but later on he gave all that up.
Yeah, but I mean, he was lucky, because if he didn't eat enough, he wouldn't remain.
But you can use the dream analogy of the jiva for the individual, but doesn't Bhagavan also does that? That this is Bhagavan's dream that includes my own upadhi with it.
Yeah, the upadhi is part. Yeah.
But isn't this Ishwara's dream then?
Yeah.
If and you can withdraw when I pass, when I leave the body.
As long as you don't think of Ishwara as a little man having a dream. You think of Brahman consciousness, infinite consciousness with this Maya, that is Ishwara. Brahman is Ishwara. Brahman that has Maya, which is natural, incidental attribute, as Swamiji says, this Brahman, you know, the Purusha, infinite conscious being, infinite me, with Maya, is what is Ishwara. There's no Ishwara apart from Brahman. Brahman is Ishwara. Brahman with Maya is Ishwara. The only reason we say Brahman with Maya, you know, because Maya is an incidental attribute of Brahman. The only reason we say that is so that you can recognize in yourself this upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs here, the conscious being that you are is the conscious being which Ishwara is. So your Atma, your self, this self that you are is the self that Ishwara is. That's why we say Atma Brahman Ishwara Jiva. Because you will think that yourself, this me, is limited to this body, mind, sense organs. I'm just a cut, this jiva. And Ishwara's Sarvajna is omniscient and has all powerful and all of that. The whole infinite creation is Ishwara. And so the jiva is just a little part of Ishwara, right? This body is only a little tiny part of the whole infinite creation. But the teaching is that the Atma, the self, the truth of this body, mind, sense organs, the self of this body, mind, sense organs, is the self of Ishwara. That this self is Brahman. That's why we use the terms. Otherwise, we would just say Ishwara. Brahman is Ishwara. Just say Ishwara, because that's Brahman with the Maya Upadhi. But you as a jiva can never say, well, I am Ishwara. Because you're only part of Ishwara. Like a wave can't say, I'm the ocean, because it's only a little part of the ocean. To say it's the ocean, it has to recognize, the truth of my being is the water, which is the truth of the ocean.
Yeah, you got me when you said, as long as you're the little God up there.
There's no little God up there.
No guy in the sky.
Oh, we've got Krishna and Rama and all the devas, all the avatars, all of the all the devatas.
But if I recognize the self, that I'm not this body-mind complex, aren't I the same as Ishvara as far as withdrawing the universe?
The conscious me is the conscious me of Ishvara. There's only one conscious me. Only one. So when you say me, and you're just focusing on the conscious being that you are, that is the same, that is the me of Ishvara, that's the me of Tibby, that's the me of me, and me, and me. There's only one. There's only one me. But within the creation, there's an infinite number of minds, infinite number of forms, and all of them from their own standpoint, all of them enjoy only that one me. Like if you think of the dream, the whole dream comes, but the whole dream enjoys only one self, which is me. So the whole universe comes, it enjoys only one self, which is me, conscious being. This body, mind, sense organs is part of that one universe, part of Ishvara. But the me is the self of Ishvara. Or you can say Ishvara's self is me. Ishvara's self is the self that I am.
It's a little more comfortable language-wise. I always have trouble with that me.
Yeah, because then you think you're on an ego trip. What? You're saying I'm Ishvara? Mm-hmm. You can say the self of Ishvara is myself. Yeah. Because language is powerful.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about if somebody knows who they are, they may still have some kind of propensity towards like old habits and things.
Yeah, that's right.
That may, I don't know if this is putting it rightly, that may even obscure who they are.
They act as obstructions.
Yeah.
Pratibandhakas.
So then, in that case, do they forget who they are? Like, what happens then?
You know, there are different kind of, I don't want to say stages, but say you actually know who you are. There's self-recognition of your own change, the changelessness of your own being that is there no matter what the thought is. Okay, so now, but let's look at what that really means. Like say you have a thought which is, or an emotion which is very sad or agitated or annoyed, you know, as well as having a happy thought, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're having this sad thought. You know yourself, the self that you are. But now here you are having this sad thought that and a reaction about something or other. And that sad thought with the reaction is, if you start analyzing its will, because this happened and this happened and this happened, I'm irritated. And another put it into another language. I didn't want it to go like this. I wanted it to go like that. So why? Well, so I could be happy. Right? So that's kind of an agnanam, an ignorant cycle. Because that means my mind has got tripped into taking my ananda or my wholeness to be dependent on the situation being in a particular way.
Yeah.
Okay, so that type of getting tripped or triggered is habitual. We have beginningless lifetimes of it. Okay. So even though I know myself, my own wholeness, my own fullness, which is, I say aparoksha. Aparoksha means it is, I don't lose my meanness. I don't lose myself, who I am. But then the mind can behave according, it'll get lost in old patterns. And you'll find yourself in some kind of a reaction that's just like a totally ignorant way of thinking. You know? So you'll have these areas like that. And so what you have to do is when those triggers come, and you kind of go down that bouncing ball, you have to just bring your mind back through your knowledge. And then that becomes easier and easier. And then it becomes easier and easier to let these rifts go, these patterns of thinking go, because they're so useless in terms of your own shanti. you know.
So it's
but
easy.
But then there's also inner child work that needs to be done. There's some triggers that we have because of traumas that we have when we're little and that type of thing. And then sometimes it's more helpful than the adult, you can just bring the mind back. But there can be complexes inside, you know, like a hurt little girl, hurt little boy inside that needs some love. And then you have to deal with those psychological parts in a different way. So we do that too. You know? But even with those psychological parts that need some love and attention and way of holding them are triggered, if you know yourself, nothing happens to you. Even though it's not like all of a sudden you've changed. You never change. But your mind is still subject to some of these rifts. And so then you have to give your mind time and care to get over those patterns. And you do get over them in time. But you can't say, once you know yourself, you can't say that yourself is not there in the middle of that riff. Because it took, you know what I mean by riff, like a guitar riff or something. Because you are exactly the same. And this is also happening. And so there's in chapter 13, I think, of the Gita, in the one beautiful place, Shankara says something like, the only person that will really know that you're a jnani is yourself and your teacher. Because until your mind is matured of all of these patterns, everybody will just think, oh.
Useless.
Yeah, this person is talking this and this, and look at how she behaves, or look at how he behaves, or whatever. You know? But for the person, you know, it might not be so good for the other people if they're going to be judging you in one way or the other, but for you, you know exactly what it is. And it's not about not knowing yourself.
Yeah.
It's about these what we call pratibandhikas. It's called pratibandhika jnanam. What it means is your mind is still behaving, because there's an emotional lag time before all the different parts of your mind really live up to what you yourself know and what's the reality for yourself. There's this emotional lag time. It's called, you know, knowledge with obstructions. And what kind of obstructions, what does that mean? Well, it means that the mind loses its ananda or its shanti. And that's all. Because of habitual.
And that won't last a whole lifetime, will it?
No. Well, if it does, you'll be born in next life and take care of them. But who cares? I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, we're not on the clock. And once you know yourself, you can have a lot of a compassion for your mind and your life and other people's minds and their lives. And just, you know, we're all doing the best we can. Even the jnanis, I'm telling you, you know, like, it's a hard life out there. I mean, I see Swamiji's life. My God. The things he has to go through and deal with. And he's, to me he's he's an exemplar. Completely, for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I see it's not an easy life. You know, he deals. He handles it beautifully. And then we handle it as beautifully as we can. He's also made mistakes, got himself in this trouble and that trouble. And he's handled his mistakes beautifully. We have to be able to just be and handle our mistakes beautifully and do the best we can. And it's all complicated. It's a complicated, you know.
So
but yourself is not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
The Atma is not complicated. And yourself is always there and it's pure way. You can't do anything to it. You always be fine and always the same. You have to bring the complications back home all the time.
Well, that's so simple.
It's so simple, but the problem is we have a lot of notions. You know? It's a lot of notions. It's like you never stop learning and you can always do something better.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just do as the best that you can give. And you learn more and more. Like I know to Swamiji, He gives as much as he possibly can, and the amount that he can give at this point, and even if I think 20 or 30 years ago, is huge. But he gives as much as he can. He also gets tired sometimes.
Yeah. Well, in that way, you should never be disappointed then. I mean, whatever stage or whatever is projection you end up with, it's still... It's not a disappointing thing.
No, and I think... I think that there's some... I don't know quite how to say this, because I haven't talked too much about this before, but
mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about it lately. But I think that there's some kind of a lot of ego in disappointment. There's some sort of too much ahankar there in your disappointment with yourself. Like you're supposed to, it's almost like it's an illusion. Like you think that you're supposed, you have ideals of perfection that don't exist. You know, and you hold yourself to these, to perfectionist standards that nobody achieves. Not even the great, great Mahatma, not some, for me it's always Swamiji.
So they're
great Mahatma.
It's impossible then, huh?
Yeah, impossible standards. Yeah. And Swamiji said at very important times in my life, he said things that made me understand that. Like once he said, you know, this one I've quoted so many times to all of you. Once he said, my mind does so many funny things, so what? And I thought, your mind does funny things? Really? And then that was huge relief.
Yeah.
You know? I'm seeing him get tired and cranky. And it passes and it goes. He's not a tired, cranky person. You don't get to see that very often, but if it does, he's not going to even think about it.
So he wasn't touched by that or affected?
No, he's not. And the thing is, but you have the attitude, if you make some mistake, then you just correct it. That's all. If you have a reaction, you have a problem, then you take care of it. It's all, that's objectivity. And you just take care of it, whatever it is, whether it's something out here or something in here.
Well, that's
just
true.
It's an issue or this problem has come up. You don't have this feeling as, oh, for me to be a really good person, I can't have any problems come up. I mean, that isn't realistic. It's false. You know, it's false, and it'd be hard for you to be with other people too, because it's false for them too. And so they can't have any problems, or they can't do anything wrong, or I don't know. It's all crazy.
Well, is that true for even the little ones inside, that maybe they're dealing with some trauma and they get overcome by it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're dealing with the unconscious parts. Those are all traumas. But those traumas, the little unconscious traumas we have inside, we can be a really ideal parent
mm-hmm.
for those inner parts, much better than we can do out here.
Mm-hmm.
Much more consistent. You know, those parts you can slowly change and grow. You can work with them. And just do your best. The self is good.
Yeah.
Atma is good. So, and that goodness never goes away.
It's benign.
Mm-hmm. Your self is beautiful and benign, mm-hmm. and there's nothing that can ever take that away.
Yeah.
And so whatever fireworks are going on in the world or in your mind or in all levels, they just have to be dealt with, you know. And we learn how to deal with those things. The only way to deal with anything really is through to be objective and to be loving. And to whatever degree you're not objective and not loving, you have to change because it creates pain. And so the universe is a great teacher every step of the way, you know. And so we go on learning and maturing and growing, but all the while, yourself is fine. Yourself is whole and is always there with you, with your experiences. And yourself never judges anything. Your being never judges. It never rejects you. It never thinks that you're bad. It's always there in exactly the same way. That's right. When Swamiji says you're in the end, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. Because in Ishwara, there is no rejection. The whole thing is Ishwara, the whole thing. And the self is, there's not the slightest rejection in the self. It doesn't exist. You know, and so we're just on that process, natural process of maturing. And along the way, if you get self-knowledge, then you can enjoy that natural process of maturing. See what I mean? You gain knowledge, then this process of maturing is like a flowering. It's a natural flowering. And you make your mistakes along the way, and you're not mature here, and could be more mature here. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's how it is. There's nothing wrong with that. We're just unfolding as we do. It's kind of a relief to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like you created a very beautiful space.
Yeah, we can all just relax in our imperfection.
In the super bar.
In the super bar.
We can walk out as angels.
That's really a good point, you know, when you said that you notice that there's an ego identity with being
mm-hmm.
being the best student, you know.
Yeah, the best of anything.
Yeah, you know. Was pleasing to the teachers. Like that.
Yeah, there is something really funny about disappointment. So.
It's a big thing to get over that. Yeah. Yeah. It's a relief. Okay, let's stop.